From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the sixth day of July 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll hear from the entomologist and plant pathologist that work for University of Illinois Extension here on campus about some of the pests that you'll find in your fields and what you may or may not want to do about them. Japanese beetle and fungicide application are among the topics. And then as we close out our time together, in the first half hour, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He is from Agribowl.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is with us. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you on this day, Todd. I'm glad it wasn't a couple days ago.
Oh, boy, I guess. You know, I almost held off, Mike, and I told you this already, in recording Commodity Week yesterday, thinking that there might be some change in the marketplace, and then I decided that it wouldn't be any more than 8 or 9 cents. But holy smokes, a 38-cent bump in the soybean market, that's pretty dramatic. Do we think there's more upside and potential in this marketplace still?
I think there is if we do not have any additional negative rhetoric or action this weekend. I say that because three major assets held in there very nicely. The wheat market started us off. It ended up closing higher on the week as a result of the drop in production. It continues to be seen in countries of Europe and Eastern Europe. I think the other thing that happened yesterday, Todd, was the 200-week moving average in the meal held in there very nicely on a closing basis. That's going to be a big number to me the rest of this year, especially if we do end up having more negative rhetoric. And so that $323, $325 level is going to be really important, I think, to give us an idea of whether we're actually going to lose support and take another major move down or not. Lastly was the fact that we saw the dollar hit a three-week low on good jobs data. So we've built a really nice base in the aftermath of this week's news and the reality that we do now have some tariffs being lodged against the United States and between us and the Chinese.
Yeah, so were there any factors built into the marketplace? The only thing really that I saw was sell the rumor, buy the fact. Any other thing that happened for the day?
Yeah, I think the big thing that happened yesterday as the deadline and the midnight time period came closer, we started to get more of a feeling that the trade had maybe factored a lot of this in already. And I think the meal led us in that respect. And it was one of the things where you look at the Brazilian premium over the U.S. Discount in beans right now. You look at where we are in terms of bean price versus the Chinese price. You know, we're looking at a 35% cheaper price than what we're trading in China in certain ports for cash beans. And Paranagua's price is about $2.15 over the CME August futures right now. That's the biggest in 14 years. It's been all the way going back to 2004, I believe it was, that we were able to put that big of a premium in Paranagua's bean price against the CME August futures or lead month futures or most heavily traded futures. So it was one of those things where if we didn't add that next $200 billion worth of tariffs, I think that's really, if I had to nail one thing down to say what changed this morning as opposed to what we were fearful of or expectations were, is that we could look at these pieces of good news and these discounts in the U.S. price because we didn't take it to the next level and throw out that $200 billion tariff that we had threatened if China did the $34 billion in reciprocal tariff threats. So.
Or at least not yet. So we have to wait it out, I suppose. And we don't know what the Trump administration will do.
I think this is a key. I think, you know, this weekend, I think, helps me answer a lot of questions. If we don't move this weekend, I'll feel better about early next week. I'll also be eager to see if that ridge of heat returns into the U.S. corn belt and U.S. bean belt. That could become a mitigating factor to some of the negative tariff, negative demand news if we start to think maybe the supply is coming down. I think the other thing we talked about on Commodity Week a week or so ago was the EPA and the administrator, the secretary of the EPA, Pruitt. I think the resignation announced last night or late in the day yesterday, I think that's really going to help ease the market concerns when it comes to the corn and maybe help the corn trade more in sympathy with the crude oil if the crude oil keeps going higher. I really feel as though the sentiment in the corn market has been really negative because we just didn't know what the EPA administrator was going to do, kind of like what the president and what China was going to do with the tariffs. So I think those two pieces of news are good things that we could carry over into next week if we have a good weekend.
It'll be interesting to see if Andrew Wheeler, who is the interim director or administrator of the U.S. EPA, will take a look at the rulemaking and change that at all as it relates to the RFS and particularly for corn-based ethanol. We'll have to wait that one out a bit, but that's something like it's 1.5 billion gallons, so around 450,000 bushel of corn. So we'll have to wait that out and see what that, or 450 million bushel of corn. We'll have to wait that one out and see. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
I think the big deal next week, like this week, and like we talked about a week ago on the Commodity Week, is the soy meal, the wheat, and the dollar have a relationship together, I think. When they go in the right direction and it's inflationary, then we have less likelihood of the trade getting nervous about these tariffs. Or if they're going to price in the tariffs, they're going to try and trade a more deflationary mindset. If we can keep looking for that footprint, that's been working so far.
And finally, wheat is supportive in the whole process, and I only have about 30 seconds.
Wheat is very supportive here. In fact, we are now discount to the French price. The French price and Rhone, the cash market, has rallied 11 to 12% just this week. So we are now a discount market on the soft red wheat, and now harvest is getting wrapped up.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, yesterday afternoon, U.S. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt stepped down, and the Trump administration last night imposed tariffs. Enough said there. Let's change topics and take up insect and pest management. Well, Japanese beetles are showing up in corn and soybean fields. These can do enough damage to cause yield losses, but it's fairly unlikely. The University of Illinois has published thresholds for when farmers should spray crops to protect them from the Japanese beetle. Nick Sider says there needs to be a lot of beetles and a whole lot of damage done before a producer should spend money on a rescue treatment.
Most of the reports that I'm getting, as you would expect and as is typical, are below the treatment thresholds we have, which are 25% after bloom, 35% before bloom, soybean. And the thresholds for silk clipping in corn are, you know, consistent clipping down to half an inch or less pretty regularly throughout the field. A question yesterday about what to do when you have both Japanese beetles and corn rootworm clipping silks in the field, and the answer is the same. It still has to be that clipping down to half an inch or less consistently through the field while pollination is still ongoing.
Again, Illinois Extension entomologist Nick Sider says farmers have no need to apply a rescue treatment for Japanese beetles until defoliation reaches at least 25% after bloom for soybean, and silk clipping during pollination is down to half an inch or less for corn. You know, farmers are always under pressure to spend more money to protect their crop from insect pests and diseases. In the case of fungicides, corn producers will hear about the potential for yield increases, too. The odds are against that, says University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Nathan Klicheski.
It's not consistent. You're probably less than 30% of the time that you're going to see anything. And as I've mentioned in some of my talks and some of my posts, Your main reason for applying a fungicide should be to prevent disease, and that's when you're going to see the most benefit. If you're applying it thinking that maybe 30% of the time you'll get two bushels, that's a pretty big gamble, especially with today's commodity prices. My thought is if you need it because you have a lot of disease, then use it. If you don't think you're going to have disease, then don't use it and save yourself the money. That's kind of my thought.
Nathan Klicheski is a plant pathologist for University of Illinois Extension. You may read more from him online at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu or just look for at ILPlantDoc on Twitter. On this Friday afternoon, let us turn our attention to the agricultural weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agrible. Thanks for being with us, Eric. Looks like some drier air might be coming in. What can you tell me about it?
Yeah, well, that ridge that's been over us, keeping much of the last, about 10 days quite warm, has finally actually pushed far enough to the east that a little low pressure system formed just east of the Hudson Bay. And so draped way far south of that, we have a front. And it's nice. It's actually going to be bringing in some drier air. We're going to be seeing some overnight low temperatures that are not just going to be in the 60s, but may at times get all the way into the upper 50s, which is going to feel just absolutely fantastic for this time of year. So we're going to get some temporary relief from some of this incredible heat as this large ridge finally moves to the east. But I don't think we're done quite yet with the heat. But the nice thing is we're going to have several days here in a row where even though we're going to have high temperatures that are going to be getting up into the 80s, we're going to have enough dry air in place that under some high pressure that it's going to feel pleasant for a little bit. And I tell you, the corn at this point in the year really kind of needs this. So I'm glad this little front's coming through to kind of wipe out some of the incredibly hot humid conditions we've had recently.
You know, we're part of the way into the hurricane season, and I know this makes more sense later in the year as we get closer to Labor Day and we're watching for maybe a rainfall to come after the month of August. But what do we see in the way of tropical storms at this point?
Yeah, well, this is always something we have to watch at this time of year. And I think there are two big things we want to be paying attention to. Let's talk about the active storm systems first. So coming off the west coast of Africa, we have relatively cooler than average water temperatures. So that limits a lot of potential systems that are born off the coast of Africa. But we still have one right now. And just a couple of days ago, I was watching it. It was just kind of a tropical disturbance, but it's been upgraded to a Category 1 strength hurricane named Beryl. Now, where the heck is it? Well, it's still way far to the east of the Lesser Antilles. So this is not even in the Caribbean yet. But right now, it's on a trajectory that's going to take it toward, like, Puerto Rico. It's going to take it toward, the island of Hispaniola, where Haiti and the Dominican Republic are. We have to watch this carefully. And the reason why, and this is the second point, is the flow pattern of the atmosphere is going to readjust over the next week or so back toward a ridge centered in the central plains. So that's going to allow some heat to really build back into the middle part of the country. You know, we just got done with some, but we're going to go back up into the 90s. And what I'm trying to paint a picture for you is that if that ridge builds into the middle part of the country, this hurricane, if it gets into the Gulf, can actually slide right underneath it. It's kind of a neat phenomenon we watch, when the tropics get really active and we have this mid-level flow pattern across the United States where there's a big ridge. And that can let some of that tropical moisture get pretty far to the north. So we're going to be seeing that as kind of something to watch in the next 10, let's call it next 10 to 15 days. So we got to start watching the tropics very closely this time of year. And just kind of tell you another thing, we have just off the East Coast a little tropical system we're watching. National Hurricane Center is giving it about a 70% chance of development. It's going to be mostly an offshore event. But if I had to pick one spot across the country that's going to be wet over the next 5 to 7 days, it's going to be the mid-Atlantic down through the southeast, getting over to eastern Texas. That's where all the rain's going to be. And they need it in parts down there because they've actually been quite dry. But here in Illinois, we're going to spend the next 5-6 days relatively dry. So that's what this flow pattern's setting up to give us.
One of the things you mentioned in that process was the word heat. We had a month of May that was hotter than normal, a month of June that was hotter than normal. What about July?
Yeah, well, I hate to say it, but I think we're going to see persistence rule here. And what I mean by that is I don't see any indicators right now that suggest that the month of July finishes cooler than average. We've of course started it off quite warm. We do have some reprieve coming in the next few days. But it looks as though when I look at the kind of the upper level flow pattern, we look for what we call 500 millibar height anomalies. That tells us what the atmosphere is going to do. We are going to be looking through our next probably 10 to 15 days at favoring warmer than average conditions. Now, warmer than average is fine. It's when we have sustained heat above about 97 degrees on a few days in a row and overnight lows that are really deep into the 70s. And there will be a few days coming up that I think we might be flirting with those temperatures. So this is not ideal. You know, it's not 2014 July, but it's on the cusp of potentially being stressful. So we're going to have to watch this one carefully and keep close track on what each day brings and kind of go back and assess what that might possibly do to the corn crop.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible. We talk with him each and every Friday here on the Closing Market Report.